his enmity and trickery. إذا ذكر الشيطان فاستعاذ منه ومن عداوته وكيده. Therefore, anytime you remember Shaitan, you need to do three things, right? You need to first seek refuge to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's true that the Holy Quran says, إِنَّ كَيْدَ الشَّيْطَانِ كَانَ زَيْفًا. The trickery of Shaitan is weak. It's true that is there. But how strong are you? Even the strongest person you are, at any point you feel or at any point you hallucinate that you are something, that's when you're going to get defeated by the Shaitan. Right? My point is that in this short message is not about who is the real Shaitan and what he has done in order to become the real Shaitan. But what I want to mention is that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says once you're remembering Shaitan or in a place that there is a possible exposure to the overcoming of Shaitan over you, then do these things, right? Let's take a quick break and come back.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
A bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifat As-Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana,
Rabbana. All right, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, in the title of the 17th dua says, إِذَا ذُكِرَ الشَّيْطَانِ فَاسْتَعَاذَ مِنْهِ. This is what he was doing as an imam, right? You might ask, he is ma'asum, he's infallible. How can he remember himself about Shaitan, or he remind himself of Shaitan, or how can he spend time in protecting his father, or his the ones who became martyred in Karbala, right? He's a great, noble personality. He's teaching us how to seek refuge to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He's in fact training us to be able to overcome the issues that are holding us back from obedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. إِذَا ذُكِرَ الشَّيْطَانِ فَاسْتَعَاذَ مِنْهِ. Whenever he remembered Shaitan, and then what did he do? He did seek refuge to him, وَمِنْ عَدَاوَتِهِ, and from his enmity as well, وَمِنْ كَيْدِهِ, and from his trickery. The 17th dua at this point starts with this, اللهم إِنَّا نَعُودُ بِكَ مِنْ نَزَغَاتِ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ. Brothers and sisters, don't ever get arrogant over your own strength. We need to become strong. But the source of strength in this dunya is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. All the power belongs to Him. All the monetary possessions, all the wealth that exists therein in this dunya, it belongs to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Therefore, anytime you get so proud of yourself, anytime you feel that you are strong, that's exactly where you're going to break down. Right, Allahumma inna na'udu bika min nazaghat ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Oh Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, I ask you to please allow us so that we can seek refuge in the form in you and or from the instigations of the accursed shaytan, the accursed shaytan, wa kaydihi wa makayidihi, and from his trickery and his traps that he has been planning or plotting against us. وَمِنَ الثِّقَةِ بِأَمَانِيَةِ. Because Shaitan has, respected brothers and sisters, has promised that I will indeed take down all the children of Adam until I place them all in the hellfire and not let anyone surpass. Right? He says, وَمِنْ كَيْدِهِ وَمَكَايِدِهِ. From his trickery and his traps. وَمِنَ الثِّقَةِ بِأَمَانِيَةِ وَمَوَائِدِهِ. And from trust in his false hopes, his promises. وَقُرُورِهِ وَمَصَائِدِهِ. And his delusions and his snares. And وَأَنْ يُتَمَّ وَقُرُورِهِ وَمَصَائِدِهِ وَأَنْ يُتْمَعَ نَفْسَهُ فِي إِذْلَالِنَا أَنْ تَعَتِكَ. Or lest he should make himself crave to lead us away from your obedience. Right? إِذْلَالِنَا أَنْ تَعَتِكَ. This is what Shaitan wants. Let's take a final break and inshallah we'll come back to wrap up today's session.
You are listening to the program Bridge on Iran Radio.
Shaitan has promised, respected brothers and sisters, on the very first day, on the very first day that he was ordered to leave the dwellers or the place that the dwellers of the heaven were residing, to outside, you're not allowed or you do not deserve to be in this place anymore. And then he said, I will indeed make sure, and instead of expressing humbleness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he started to express what? Arrogance, which is one of the worst attitude one can have, right? He says, you know what? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created you from this and that. Then I'm better. I'm that. And then he says to Adam that because of this, because of being ordered to leave the heavens, I will make sure that none of the children or offsprings of Adam will make it completely healthy through the life of this dunya, I mean in the spiritual dimension, meaning that I will make sure that they die from this world or from the life of this dunya while they deserve hellfire. لَأُغْوِيَنَّهُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ as the Holy Quran says. So at the very beginning it says, اللَّهُمَّ إِنَّا نَعُوذُ بِكَ مِن نَزَغَاتِ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ وَكَيْدِهِ وَمَكَايِدِهِ O Allah, from the instigations of shaitan, this accursed shaitan, from his trickery, from his traps, I do seek refuge to you. And anytime you're trapped by the traps of shaitan, the first thing to do is to seek refuge in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Bridge on Iran Radio with Sheikh Mahdi, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواه از کف دهن عشق و تولای تو را
The Zionist regime has committed massacres across all areas of the Gaza Strip, while its forced starvation and displacement policies continue unabated. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, as Palestinians in Gaza try to celebrate Eid al-Fitr, the holiday marking the end of the month of Ramadan, the Zionist regime airstrikes escalated and intensified. On March 30, the first day of Eid, Israeli regime attacks killed more than 50 Palestinians and injured nearly 200. The next day, the Israeli regime army issued mass forced displacement orders on the entire Rafah governorate in the south. Similar displacement orders were issued in North Gaza, Gaza City, and in eastern Khan Yunis. Samir Zaghout, the Gaza-based deputy director of the human rights group Al-Mizan, said that Israel's continued closure of crossings and the obstruction of humanitarian aid are worsening the situation in Gaza to an unprecedented degree, even compared to the past 17 months. Without fuel, Zaghout added, essential services, such as desalination plants and water wells, have ceased functioning, pushing people toward life-threatening levels of thirst and hunger. The scale of deprivation is unlike anything we have seen since the start of the Zionist regime's genocide in Gaza in October 2023. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza reported that Israeli regime forces
have killed more than 1,000 Palestinians since the resumption of their full-scale genocidal attacks on March 18th, and that entire families have been wiped out. On April 2nd, Israeli regime attacks killed at least 77 Palestinians, according to medical sources. Amongst the various massacres, Israel bombed a UN medical clinic in Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza, killing more than 20 people, according to the Gaza government's media office. Al Jazeera reporter Anas Sharif interviewed a mother whose children, including her newborn baby, were killed in the Zionist regime's airstrikes. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, stated recently that an average of 100 Palestinian children have been killed or injured every day since the resumption of the full-scale attacks. Physicians in Gaza say that they spent the last few days cutting off new aid holiday clothes from dead children. An American emergency doctor, Razan Al-Nahas, recounted her experience from Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis on March 30. Last week, it was reported that Palestine Red Crescent Society medics and Palestinian Civil Defense first responders were missing. They disappeared after one ambulance crew was dispatched in an attempt to treat injured people following an airstrike in Rafah. Israeli regime troops had fired on the first ambulance, injuring the paramedics. The Red Crescent then sent another three ambulances to find and treat its colleagues and to rescue those who had been attacked. But all contact was lost, and rescuers were blocked by Israeli regime troops for a week from trying to locate the paramedics. Euromed Human Rights Monitor said that additional ambulances and civil defense crews were able to reach the scene on Friday, March 28, following international coordination. They discovered the mission's director, Civil Defense Officer Anwar Abdul Hamid Al-Attar, saying, dead with his body shredded. The rescue crews that arrived Friday also found all the Red Crescent vehicles, fire trucks, and ambulances completely reduced to charred metal. 1 week after their disappearances on March 30, a mass grave was found containing the bodies of 8 Red Crescent paramedics and 6 civil defense first responders, as well as an employee of the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, according to the civil defense. One body was recovered with the hands bound, according to the Red Crescent, and Israeli regime bulldozers had tried to bury the vehicles. Dr. Bashar Murad, the Red Crescent's director of health programs, told The Guardian that one of the paramedics in the convoy had been on a call to his colleagues at the ambulance station when the attack took place. Murad said he informed us that he was injured and requested assistance and that another person was also injured. A few minutes later, during the call, we heard the sound of Israeli soldiers arriving at the location, speaking in Hebrew. The conversation was about gathering the team, with the statements like, gather them at the wall and bring some restraints to tie them. This indicated that a large number of medical staff were still alive. Jonathan Vittel from the UN Monitoring Group, OCHA, was on the scene when the mass grave containing the bodies of the rescue workers was found. Mahmoud Basal, the spokesperson for the Civil Defense Corps in Gaza, said that one of the medics had his clothes removed and another one was beheaded, and that they had been executed at point-blank range by Israeli regime soldiers. A member of the civil defense team involved in the effort to recover the victims' bodies said in a statement to Euromed Monitor that the bodies had distinct features, but they were in the early stages of decomposition. When they were examined, the civil defense member said it was evident that a barrage of bullets had struck them. Based on my observations, the injuries were located in the chest region. A closer look revealed that some of the victims had still been alive despite their injuries. They were apparently buried alive with their feet bound. One body, the civil defense rescue worker added, was covered in severe bruises and showed evidence of torture, and his legs seemed bound. After being shot in the back of the head, his face was completely ripped up. Another rescue worker said he was shot in the head from the very close distance, causing his skull to shatter. He said, "We discovered that every employee of the Palestinian Red Crescent had been shot in the left and right sides of the head." The civil defense in Gaza warned that the execution of these medical workers is aimed at emptying the Gaza Strip of humanitarian and relief services. In light of these dangerous plans, the international community, the International Civil Defense Organization, and international human rights organizations are called upon today to take effective action and not simply watch these Israeli crimes, which amount to war crimes and genocide. One Red Crescent worker, an ambulance officer named Assad al-Nasra, remains missing. Meanwhile, bakeries in Gaza have been forced to close because of Israel's month-long intensified blockade and on the ongoing closure of all crossings. The World Food Programme, WFP, said that because of the lack of flour and fuel, all 25 of the bakeries it supports are out of service. Jonathan Vittel of the UN Monitoring Group, OCHA, said on April 2nd, that the humanitarian crisis is quite literally spiraling out of control. He said, on April 1st, all 25 subsidized bakeries by WFP were closed, and people's survival is dependent on an aid system that itself is under attack as aid workers are killed and our work is obstructed. And yet, we are told, and I find it very difficult to hear, that Gaza has enough food because supplies have entered during a month-long ceasefire, following a year in which supplies were literally drip-fed into the Gaza Strip. Vital added, my colleagues tell me that they just want to die with their families. Their worst fear is to survive alone. Day and night, we listen to airstrikes shaking Gaza. Bombs are falling non-stop. Hospitals are overflowing with mass casualties, the one just a block away from me included. Whittle said, it's an endless loop of blood, pain, death, and Gaza has become a death trap. We cannot accept, and as humanitarians, I need to emphasize this, we cannot accept that Palestinian civilians are dehumanized to the point of being somehow unworthy of survival. He added that the execution of medical workers by Israeli regime forces and their burial in a mass grave was emblematic of the point that we've reached in Gaza. What is happening here defies decency. It defies humanity. It defies the law. It really is a war without limits.
Thank you. streets and alleys. Ever since you left, I must confess, the world has become a total mess. You were the bridge that connected hearts, always there for us when we were in distress. Everywhere I look, I see your trace. You tried to make the world a better place. Oppressors will never forget your frown. The oppressed will not forget the smile on your face. Oh, how you shine like a constellation in the sky. Oh, how you shine in the minds of nations that hold you high. Oh, tell me how it feels under the tree of bliss. Trees you planted are missing you, but they've learned to blossom just like you. Though you were martyred mercilessly, an army of you is growing globally. 'Cause people are tired of all this prejudice. They wanna fight like you against injustice. Your name is Qasem Soleimani. You're a hero of humanity.
You defy of intelligence, sending shivers down the spine of global arrogance. You decried oppression in every form, even though it put you in the eye of the storm. You extinguished the flames of terror far and wide. You helped countries to reclaim their land that was occupied. That's why people will remember you as a hero, though the powers that be will picture you as a foe. You see, they instigate the terror and manipulate the news, so they can whitewash every crime to make the world confused. They can say what they want, let them curse at the mirror. Truth will always prevail, let them live in error.
You found the key to heaven's gate. Martyred for justice, what a noble fate. Your legacy will linger on. Forever your name we celebrate. Oh, how you shine like a constellation in the sky. Oh, how you shine in the minds of nations that hold you high. Oh, tell me how it feels under the tree of bliss. Oh, how you shine like a constellation.
Imagine a gas so rare, but so incredibly important and necessary for cutting-edge medical equipment, space exploration, and even quantum computing. Bet you weren't thinking about helium now, were you? But helium is the topic for this week's episode of Iran Tech. This incredibly valuable resource that is very difficult to find. You can mostly find it in natural gas, but the extraction process is one that only very few countries in the world have access to, only those who have access to great many natural gas reserves. And in this week's episode of Iran Tech, we've come to the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, who are the pioneers of this extraction procedure, to find out how important helium is and how the extraction process works. So why is helium so difficult to extract? Well, for one, it's an inert gas, meaning it doesn't really bond with anything. That means we can't use typical adsorption and absorption methods to get it to stick to something and in that way extract it from natural gas. Also, it is very light and very elusive, and once it escapes, it is gone for good. So traditionally, what we've been doing to procure the helium required for the country's use in perhaps the medical sector, for example, is to import it from countries like Qatar, who are one of the top exporters of helium. We also have the U.S., which is another top exporter of helium. And the common thing between these two countries is that they both have extremely good access to a large reserve of natural gas. And so it was only natural for us, with having the second largest natural gas reserve in the world, to enter the picture. And that's exactly what we've done, pioneered by the efforts of the scientists of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran. So in a little bit, we will show you exactly how we've managed to extract helium from our natural gas.
Helium is one of the rarest gases on Earth, not because it's hard to make, but because it's so elusive. Yet, hidden deep underground, nature has been producing helium for billions of years. Unlike most elements, helium doesn't come from chemical reactions. It's created through radioactive decay, deep within the Earth's crust. It all starts with heavy elements, uranium and thorium, trapped inside rocks. Over millions of years, these elements slowly break down in a process called radioactive decay. As they decay, they release alpha particles, tiny clusters of protons and neutrons. Alpha particles don't stay as they are. As they move through rock, they capture electrons from their surroundings, transforming into helium atoms. But helium is incredibly light, and it doesn't like to stay put. It seeps upward, slipping through cracks in the Earth's crust. Most of it keeps rising until it reaches the surface and drifts off into space, lost forever. In rare cases, thick layers of rock act like a lid, trapping helium underground for millions, sometimes even billions of years. Over time, these helium pockets mix with natural gas, creating the reserves we mine today. Helium is a silent gift from the depth of the Earth, billions of years in the making.
As you are aware, over 90% of the world's helium reserves are located in our country, yet we have not been able to extract this helium. The mission assigned to us at the Atomic Energy Organization is to harness this divine resource. As you can see in the pilot facility behind me, we aim to extract helium using cryogenic methods. Helium, derived from natural gas, has numerous applications, including as a coolant in nuclear reactors, as well as in welding, diving, research balloons, and detectors. The methods for helium extraction are primarily from natural gas, and here we are employing cryogenic techniques. For this method, the natural gas must first be purified. It is then cooled to temperatures of minus 50 degrees Celsius and minus 180 degrees Celsius using heat exchangers. We can achieve this using equipment developed domestically within the Atomic Energy Organization. Through distillation towers, we further increase its purity to the highest possible level. The equipment used in this pilot project is entirely based on indigenous engineering, design, and manufacturing expertise. At the Atomic Energy Organization, we have successfully developed and operationalized these systems.
The method of choice for helium extraction here is called cryogenic distillation. What happens first is we bring CNG, compressed natural gas, and we inject them into these adsorption towers. Adsorption because the medium for adsorption is solid. If it were liquid, it would have been called absorption tower. Now, what is it supposed to adsorb? Well, the CNG has a lot of impurities in it that we don't want in the purification process. So in this first step, all of those impurities, which are mainly CO2, are adsorbed by the solid that is in this tower. So what we have outside of this adsorption tower into the heat exchanger is pure CNG, not pure helium, pure CNG. And in this heat exchanging chamber, we add liquid nitrogen to the temperature of minus 180 degrees Celsius. Now, this liquid nitrogen brings down the temperature of the CNG to minus 80 degrees in the first stage, and this minus 80 degrees gas then is transferred into the distillation chamber, the distillation tower, and through certain processes of evaporation and distillation, We take advantage of the extremely low boiling points of helium, which is minus 269 Celsius, and its comparatively much higher boiling point of LNG. And through this distillation and evaporation, what we get from this first phase of distillation is LNG out of the distillation tower. But we have to re-inject the remaining CNG, which now has a higher purity of helium, down from a 0.04% to a 0.06%, all the way up to 1% after the first stage of heat exchange and distillation. So we re-inject the remaining CNG with higher purity of helium to the heat exchanger. Now the liquid nitrogen brings down the temperature of the CNG to minus 180 degrees flat, then reintroduce it back into the distillation tower for another batch of distillation and evaporation. And what we get out of this second phase is 70% helium with some LNG that is going to be essentially reintroduced back into the gas grid of the whole country. So this is only two stages of distillation because it's happening in a lab, in a controlled environment, as a pilot. Once it is applied at a factory scale, we will need to add a couple more stages to bring up the purity of helium to grade 5, 99.999% purity. But this was supposed to be a proof of concept. Now let's take a closer look at the inner workings of this facility to take a closer look at what happens inside of these chambers.
After we've achieved 70% purity using cryogenic distillation at the lab scale, the next steps in a factory setting involve further purification and concentration to achieve high-quality helium, often referred to as grade 5 helium, with a purity of 99.999%. In a factory, once we've distilled the gas down to the desired concentration, the next step is the use of pressure swing adsorption, or PSA, and temperature swing adsorption, or TSA. These methods use specialized adsorbent materials to selectively capture impurities from the helium gas. Pressure swing adsorption, or PSA, works by pressurizing the gas and passing it through an adsorbent bed, which binds and removes residual impurities like nitrogen, oxygen, and hydrocarbons. Once the impurities are trapped, the system releases the pure helium under lower pressure, ensuring that we collect the highest purity possible. This is done in multiple cycles to ensure that only the helium remains. On the other hand, temperature swing adsorption, or TSA, uses heat to change the adsorption properties of the material, allowing it to release any remaining contaminants when heated, while still retaining the helium. This process is used to polish the gas further, removing any trace impurities that may have escaped the PSA step. By combining PSA and TSA, we can achieve helium with grade 5 purity suitable for high-tech applications. Once the helium is purified, it's then liquefied and stored in tanks under high pressure, ready for transportation. The liquid helium is transported and eventually regasified for various industrial, scientific, and medical uses.
The primary goal of this project is to establish a plant capable of producing 20 tons of liquid helium per year. Liquid helium production generally involves four main stages: helium extraction from natural gas following initial purification, secondary purification to produce grade 5 helium, final purification, and liquefaction. The pilot facility here is designed to validate design data and ensure its accuracy. We are currently implementing the first two stages, helium extraction and initial purification, at this site. For this purpose, we have adopted cryogenic distillation towers, the globally predominant method for helium extraction from natural gas. Internationally, helium is often obtained as a byproduct of LNG plants. Typically, flash drums are first used to produce LNG, which contains approximately 5% helium, before further processing stages yield pure helium. Due to a lack of domestic expertise in designing such distillation towers, we built this pilot facility to gather essential data. The pilot comprises three main sections for the subsequent industrial phase. Absorption towers to remove impurities like CO2 and other gases from the feedstock. Heat exchangers to cool the natural gas until it liquefies. Distillation columns to separate a helium-enriched stream from the liquefied gas. At the inlet, helium concentration is approximately 200 to 400 parts per million, 0.04 to 0.06% by volume. After optimizing parameters in the main plant, we aim to increase this to 1 to 5%. In the second distillation column, purity is further elevated to 70%. Key data under analysis include optimizing inlet gas treatment conditions, e.g., removing CO2 and other impurities, operational parameters for distillation towers, pressure, flow rates, tray design, etc. We have also gained critical experience in manufacturing ultra-low temperature heat exchangers through this pilot, which will inform the industrial scale phase. God willing, once the main plant is operational, we will meet the nation's demand for liquid helium. Regarding the main plant, the basic design phase developed in collaboration with Sharif University has been completed. We are now advancing into the detailed engineering design phase. With data from this pilot, we will secure licensing and design expertise for helium production units in Iran, enabling deployment of such facilities nationwide in regions with natural gas reserves. By God's grace, this project will position Iran as a self-sufficient producer of liquid helium, eliminating reliance on foreign sources.
Before recording this episode, I gotta be honest, the only thing that I thought helium was really used for is, you know, you inhale it and it makes your voice sound funny. But hopefully by now we've been able to depict just how much of a strategic resource helium can be and how only countries with great access to natural gas reserves can ever hope to be producers and eventually exporters of helium. And right now the wheels are already in motion to make that factory, based on the data collected in this initial pilot phase, to be able to fulfill the needs of the country in terms of helium fully. And we can then hope to become exporters of helium because we have the natural gas to back it up. And with that said, thank you. I'll see you guys next week.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
ودعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon the soul of Prophet Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear audience, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm your host Mahdi, and as always, we are joined by Quran expert, dear brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam, brother Mahdi, and Assalamu alaikum to all of the dear listeners of this program, and thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, brother. Well, dear audience, as you may know, this program, Let's Recite the Quran, consists of several Quranic parts. First, we are going to talk about a famous Quran reciter. Then, we are going to listen to a recitation by that reciter. After it, Brother Muhammad will analyze that recitation. So please stay tuned. Well, today we are going to listen to a recitation by Sheikh Abdul Mun'im al-Tukhi. Sheikh Tukhi was born in a village in north of Egypt in 1954. His father, who was a hafiz and guardian of the Noble Quran, encouraged him to begin learning the Quran at an early age. He managed to memorize the Holy Quran completely at the age of 9, and then he started learning the principles of recitation and soon revealed his exceptional talent in the field. Abdul Mun'im al-Tukhi studied Quran recitation under the care of prominent Quran reciter Sheikh Muhammad Rifat and Sheikh Abul Ainain Shu'aisha, and especially Sheikh Mustafa Ismail. He became so popular that he was named Sheikhul Qurra, which means the master of Quran reciters of Alexandria in Egypt. He made trips to many countries like Iran, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Britain, and China to recite verses of the Noble Quran. Sheikh Abdul Mun'im al-Tukhi passed away in 2007. May Allah bless him. Now let's listen to the recitation of verses 36 and 37 of Surah Al-Hud, recited by Sheikh Abdul Mun'im al-Tukhi. Let's enjoy it.
فلا تبتئس بما كانوا يفعلون قد آمن
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, you're still listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran, and what you just listened to was recitation of verses 36 and 37 of Surah Hud, recited by Sheikh Abdul Munim Tuhi. And now, Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, indeed, it was a beautiful recitation by Sheikh Abdul Munim Tuhi, who recited in the riwayah of Warsh An-Nafi'. The first sign is the Madul Badal, Uhiyah. Madul Badal means that the cause of the Mad, which is Hamza, is before the long vowel instead of after it. And that's why they use the word Badal. Badal means substitution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, changing something into something else.
And it is lengthened to six vowel counts.
About six, or probably four. I'm not sure. It could be four or six. And another sign is Nuhinannahu. Ila Nuhinannahu. This is Naql, which means the haraka of the Hamza transfers to the previous letter,
which is Sakin.
Which is Nun Sakina. Nuhinannahu. And before we go on and talk about the tajweed, I think it's good if we talk about the maqamat as well. The maqamat that were used in this this recitation, it was mostly bayati. It was a very beautiful way of using bayati by Sheikh Abdul Munim Tuhi. It had a lot of huzn, okay? And his voice, just the nature of his voice has a lot of huzn in it. Okay.
Sorrow.
The sorrow, yes. This was Bayati. Just there was one in the Qafla. فَلَا تَبْتَئِسْ بِمَا كَانُوا يَفْعَلُونَ. This is Kurd. Just the Qafla. يَفْعَلُونَ. This is Kurd. And reciters such as Sheikh Abdul Munim Tuhi, Sheikh Muhammad Ahmad Shabib, Sheikh Muhammad Abdul Aziz Hassan, Sheikh Shahad Muhammad Anwar, Sheikh Shaban Abdul Aziz Sayyad, and Sheikh Muhammad Ahmad Basyuni, they usually use Maqam Kurd in this way. They're reciting in Bayati, and then in the Qafla, they use Kurd.
What does that mean?
Qafla means melodic cadence. The last musical performance, we could say, that is employed, okay? Mm-hmm. And it ends the maqam.
Yes.
It ends that part that is being recited, okay?
فَلَنْ
تَبْتَئِسْ بِمَا كَانُوا يَفْعَلُونَ. This is just يَفْعَلُونَ. This is Kurd.
Mm-hmm.
And just like I said, those reciters, they usually use Kurd in this way. But Sheikh Mahmoud Ramadan and Muhammad Imran, they use Maqam Kurd a lot more clearly. And they, you know, they elaborate on this Maqam. They clearly show this Maqam in the way that they perform Maqam Kurd. But other reciters, such as Sheikh Abdul Munim Tuhi, they just use it in the Qafla, we could say this.
Okay.
Okay, and we have some other rules.
If you
for
agree,
example,
talk about tajweed.
Yes,
points.
Tajweed, yes. Let's go on talk about the tajweed. Min qawmika. Here we have ikhfa of nun sakina. And we can place the tongue in the place of articulation of qaf. Because usually you wouldn't do that.
Yes.
For letters of ikhfa, you would actually approximate the place of articulation
of the letter
of the
ikhfa.
Letter of ikhfa. Approximation means you make the tongue or whatever articulator that is used get really close to the place of articulation of that letter.
And
then
we keep
it
there.
Yeah, we keep it there and then make a nasal sound for two vowel counts. But there's an exception to this rule, apparently, even though it's not a written rule, that for qaf and kaf, you are allowed to place the tongue, which is the back of the tongue, the deepest part of the tongue, and the roof of the mouth for qaf, the part of the mouth which is right above the deepest part of the tongue. This is the place of articulation of qaf.
Mm-hmm.
And for kaf is the back of the tongue a little bit more forward than qaf, and the soft velar, this actually the soft palate, which is known as the velar. That's
mm-hmm.
for kaf. They're really close to each other. And
so we put the tongue there and make a
and
nasal
make
sound.
A nasal sound, which is a complete nasal sound.
Yeah,
it's
for
not
two vowel counts.
Enthemi. We have enthemi nasalization for ikhfav nun sakina with respect to the other letters, which means it's oral and nasal, but mostly nasal. Enth means nose. Fem means mouth.
Mouth.
Enthemi. We could
oronasal.
Say it's oronasal, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
but for cough and cough, as you said, we make a completely nasal sound.
Yes, because we're totally obstructing
mm-hmm.
The oral cavity.
Yes.
And there's no other way that the sound is going to come from the mouth.
Because we place the tongue in the place of articulation and we obstacle the airflow.
Obstruct.
And we obstruct the airflow.
And yes, that's right. And let's go on to verse 37 and mention one rule of tajweed in this verse. وَلَا تُخَاطِبْنِي تُخَاطِبْنِي. We have a very
somehow
big
difficult to
contrast.
Pronounce. Yeah.
Because we have a kha at the highest level of tafkhim.
And then ta.
We have a ta at the lowest level
level
of tafkhim. And this is very difficult, especially the ta. We shouldn't say tukhatibni. Tibni is incorrect. We should lower the tafkhim to the lowest level that is possible.
And at first we have ta.
Yeah. Tu.
Tu. Yeah.
Tukha. We have the root of the tongue which is raised
mm-hmm.
and the mouth is opened vertically. And then for ta, tibni. Tibni. The ta, we spread the lips while
mm-hmm.
pronouncing ta while the root of the tongue
is
also
raised. Tukha-tibini.
Yes.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. That was the final part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And don't forget to visit our website, that is parstoday.com. Please click on the tab Call of Islam, and there you can listen to this program as well as other programs of this radio. Until next time, we'll leave you in Allah's care. Have a nice time and goodbye. صفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبي لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن وفيه محاسن الأخلاق هو القرآن IRIB English Radio
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Hour's top headlines. Dozens of more Palestinians are killed in continuous Israeli strikes on Gaza, as a new report says 600,000 children in Gaza are at risk of permanent paralysis. The UK government lashes out at Israel over detaining and denying entry to two British parliamentarians on a visit to the occupied Palestinian territories. And Iran's foreign minister rejects direct negotiations with the U.S., saying Washington's threats to use force against Tehran violate the UN Charter. Go ahead and get started with the stories that matter. The Israeli military presses ahead with its air and artillery strikes across Gaza, killing and injuring more Palestinian civilians in its latest round of attacks.